We'll call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is March 10th, 2022. This meeting is held in accordance with Bill 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. Clerk will take attendance by roll.
Representative Hansen is present. Vice Chair Wasilek.
Wasilek present.
Lead Heintzman.
Present.
Representative Acomb.
Present.
Representative Ackland.
Present.
Representative Backer.
Present.
Present. Representative Becker Finn.
Present.
Representative Eklund.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Green.
Present.
Representative Igo. Representative Igo. Representative Jordan is excused. Representative Keeler.
Keeler present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lewick.
Lewick present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Representative Tice. Representative Tice. It looks like Representative Igo.
Igo present.
Igo present. All right. Thank you.
The quorum is present. Representative Acomb, would you like to move the minutes for March 8th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Acomb moves the minutes for March 8th, 2022. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The minutes are approved. We have several bills today, members, and I'm going to try to make sure we're staying on time. The first up is House File 22,200 by Representative Vang, Climate Change Grant Program Established. We have about 20 minutes scheduled for this. I will move that House File 2200 be recommended to be re-referred to the Climate and Energy Finance Policy Committee. Representative Vang, welcome, and to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 2200 would create a local government climate action grant program. The goal of this program is to increase the number of local governments in Minnesota who are planning to do both reduce the greenhouse gas emissions and to build resilience as climate impact grows. The program will be administered by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and will award grants of up to $50,000 to local governments in Minnesota who wish to create a climate action plan. A jurisdiction with over 20,000 people would need to match the grant in order to receive it. Smaller jurisdiction would need to provide a 5% match directly or in the form of an in-kind contribution. A preference will be given to local governments that engage a broad array of residents, organizations, and institutions. Beyond this, the bill will give local governments flexibility in their planning, how they plan, what they focus on, and their recommended action steps will be up to each local government to decide. The program will build in a relationship with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's Environmental Assistance Grant Program, which in recent years has provided support for a range of local government planning and sustainability programs. Local government climate action planning is a growing practice in Minnesota. It's becoming more and more popular because it's a way to bring together local stakeholders to build a meaningful plan for the future where all local residents can live, work, learn, and thrive together. Since 2013, 13 cities and one county in Minnesota have created a standalone climate action plan. These cities are urban, suburban, and in greater Minnesota. They are as large as Hennepin County and as small as Grand Marais. This type of planning is in demand because local residents are advocating for it, and local elected officials are often the ones responsible for preparing and adapting to climate impacts. This year, 16 Minnesota cities declared climate emergencies. These resolutions are a way to acknowledge the reality we are all facing and to get our local governments moving forward with practical and popular solutions. These grants would be one important way the state can support local governments that are choosing to plan and prepare. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will yield my time for my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Vang. First up Larry Kraft, St. Louis Park City Council member. Welcome and state your name and who you're with for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Larry Kraft, St. Louis Park City Council. I also led the convening of the Minnesota City's Climate Caucus, which is a voluntary and nonpartisan coalition of primarily city elected officials from cities around the state created to share best practices and influence state policy to help us meet our goals. I have 3 points to make in support of this. Number one, local governments can be very effective here. Having a plan is very helpful and cities need support. First, local governments can be very effective at planning for and making progress on climate action. We have many touch points, including citizen education and engagement, street design, including pedestrian and biking infrastructure, tree planting, EV charging infrastructure, land use, solar energy, as well as partnering with utilities on energy efficiency programs. Every one of these is happening in my city. Second, having a plan, a climate action plan, or whatever it's named, has been very helpful and very helpful in St. Louis Park. It's provided us a roadmap and a way of measuring progress. It has helped us answer implementation questions like how do we start, how are we doing, what do we do next, and what are the most impactful things we can do to improve the sustainability of our city. Third, cities need support. As Representative Vang mentioned, about 6 weeks ago, 16 cities came together as part of this Minnesota Cities Climate Caucus around this climate emergency campaign. To date, a total of 19 cities and now one county have participated in the campaign or previously declared a climate emergency, and there are more coming. These localities are from all around the state, and many don't yet have a climate action plan. One of the biggest things I've heard, especially from small to mid-sized cities, is that they need funding and technical assistance to get started. And funding can be their path to getting this assistance that they need. So I urge your support of this bill.
Thank you. Dr. Kate Knuth, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am happy to be here today to speak in support of House File 2200. To help cities and hopefully other local government jurisdictions create climate action plans. I recently published as a consultant with the 100% campaign, a review and overview of city climate action plans in the state of Minnesota. And I know that was included with your packet members. And as Representative Vang mentioned, 13 cities and one county have developed city or climate action plans. And these plans take a range of formats and forms. They take on reducing greenhouse gas emissions as well as building climate adaptation and resilience, but they all are helping our local governments and communities prepare for the climate realities that are here and that are coming. In this assessment, we learned that about one third of Minnesotans either live in a city or county that is covered by a climate action plan. So there's still much more room to grow in terms of this practice, but also it shows the interest and the support for doing this kind of work. As you heard from Councilmember Kraft, and you will hear from Kathleen Doran Norton, local governments are interested in doing this work, and they're looking for help and support to do so. And I think the Green Step Cities, our state's award-winning program, has had over 140 participating cities in that program. So many of them are interested in making progress on climate action, but don't have the full resources they need to plan for making climate progress. And I think as Councilmember Kraft really vividly illustrated, cities and other local governments have such important ways they intersect with climate action in terms of how people move around, the buildings they inhabit, the land use practices, and how that affects the choices people make in their energy consumption. They all have really important touch points with cities and other local governments. And so it's really this local climate action planning is a really an essential foundational piece for our state to make the kind of progress needed overall. And I think, you know, when I think about why this planning matters so much and why we should support it as a state, it comes from the idea that people are hungry to plug into climate action. And sometimes state policy can feel kind of far away or getting involved in federal policy, but the local government, your city, your county, is a place to really connect with neighbors and strengthen ability to make climate progress and to figure out how, as an individual in a neighborhood, people can get involved in creating a more climate safe, climate resilient future. And so that's why I support House File 2200, and I'm really excited about the potential of the bill moving forward. And I will say, we have been in communication with Representative Vang. The way this bill has been written is focused really on cities, but the hope is to expand it to other local government units, including counties. So Hennepin County has already done a climate action planning process. And you'll hear from a testifier next who I think doesn't live in a city, but does live in a county and is really interested in seeing her county help get some resources for moving forward on climate action planning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Happy to answer questions.
And Dr. Knuth, if you could just state your name for the record.
Kate Knuth.
Great. Next up, Kathleen Doran Norton. Welcome to the committee, and if you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name's Kathleen Doran Norton. I live near Northfield in Bridgewater Township, where I served four terms as a supervisor on our town board. And when we experienced three consecutive floods year after year, each 8 to 9 inches of rain in 24 hours, each costing between a third and a half of our township levy, washing all the gravel off our roads, throwing a 12-foot culvert vertically through a paved road, shortening the life of bridges by half. I've stood in a road ditch looking up at our truck, standing on 6 inches of gravel and 6 feet of nothing underneath it. Following those floods and a year of packed, angry town meetings, we did some simple, focused planning. We did terrain analysis of two flood-prone watersheds and implemented three projects to store and infiltrate stormwater, protecting our residents and those downstream in Northfield. Funded from the DNR Office of Flood Mitigation, our county SWCD, subordinated service district fees, and our own township funds. This past fall, my county, Rice County, passed an updated comprehensive plan, which included for the first time a sustainability chapter. And this only happened because of the urging of involved citizens and the leadership of Commissioner Malika. And this winter, our county commission created a sustainability committee looking for ways to create a full-fledged plan and implement it. Consider county responsibilities, solid hazardous waste management, disaster planning, hazard mitigation, land use controls, transportation, public health, shoreland and floodplain protection, all critical climate adaptation and mitigation efforts. But as you heard, only out of 87 counties, only one has developed a climate action plan. I'd like my county to be the second one, given what we've experienced. So I support 2200, providing planning resources to our local governments. And I encourage you to support extending these planning resources to counties. Thank you.
Thank you. We have several questions from members. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my quick question is, you know, we're looking at this bill, and I'm just wondering where the grant amounts and the dollars amounts kind of came from. Like, and really, so it looks like it's a match program. Why does it cost so much to create these climate action programs? What does that look like? Just so we have a little transparency here for the committee, but also for those watching at home.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this may be best to defer this with to my testifiers, perhaps Dr. Kikamus.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. And Representative Igo and Representative Vang. You know, right now, city climate action planning is paid for by a mix of city resources and philanthropic resources. So for example, Grand Marais went out and got some grant funding. It's a pretty small city. So getting some of the technical analysis from consultants about greenhouse gas inventory, getting, as Kathleen mentioned, getting terrain analysis, understanding where flood-prone areas are, understanding what buildings like a hospital may need to be protected. Like a climate vulnerability analysis is another technical part. Like there is both community engagement and technical support that is needed to create these plans effectively and bring communities into and along through the process. And so the cost of staff time, consultant time, and ability to engage with the community is what we would envision being part of the grant, but also the MPCA is experienced at interacting with cities and local governments around these issues. So I think having them involved is really smart.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like I said, I just wish we kind of had some figures, and maybe we can provide those later just to see how like these consultants different and stuff, because I just don't want to see taxpayer dollars disappearing to some consultancy firm and then it not being a plan that's really making a difference, right? And I think that's what most taxpayers want. So thank you.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill forward. I have to take the opportunity to highlight how awesome Moorhead is. We're actually a Green Step city. We've completed 52 action items. I know that this is something that is extremely important to my community. Some of the areas that we've reported in our report include areas like our buildings and lighting, land use, transportation, environmental management, resilient economic and community development. And so this is all over the board. And so from my community, I really appreciate you, Representative Vang, for advocating for this. And I look forward to more conversations. I just wanted the chance to highlight how great Moorhead is doing in this area.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill forward. Prior to coming to the legislature, I was a city council member in Minnetonka, and we started the Green Steps program. And so I think that the connection between those two is interesting to me. And I think, Dr. Knuth, you talked about maybe 140, was that the number that I maybe remembered of cities that are participating in the Green Steps, which I think is amazing. And yet we only have, I think it was 13 cities and one county so far that have done a climate action plan. And so I want just maybe, can you help me understand the differences and the similarities between Green Step and an official climate action plan? And I know a lot of these 140 cities find sustainability and climate change and all the things very important. How much further does it need to go in order to kind of get to that climate action plan level?
Representative Vang or Dr. Knuth?
Dr. Knuth or maybe perhaps Councilmember Kraft?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick, when at doing that sort of overall analysis of where city climate action planning and leadership was happening, it does happen in multiple different places. As we've been talking about, Green Step Cities is a fantastic program. It often will also happen in comprehensive plans, in various chapters of a comprehensive planning process and document. It happens in a number of cities in the XL service territory have been involved with the Partners in Energy program, and so create energy action plans, which is a subset of the emissions that a city creates and has an impact on the climate. So the reason we reviewed city climate action plan specifically is because as the need for more faster and larger scale climate action, as well as increasing climate impacts, like say for the bad air that we experienced in our state last summer, something that I, even as someone who've worked on climate for years, never really thought we'd be there that fast. Having a focused effort on climate as a comprehensive lens and both mitigation and adaptation and resilience, I think helps cities move more effectively across the many different parts of their operations that are necessary to do this work effectively.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Knuth. I appreciate that and just really appreciate this bill and look forward to being able to support it. Thank you.
Representative Heinzman. Representative Heinzman. You were there. Representative Lippert, why don't you get your question in while we're having some connectivity problems with Representative Heinzman.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And it's simply a comment. I want to thank Representative Vang for this bill. This morning in Climate and Energy Committee, we heard from Dr. Robert Lempert, one of the lead authors on the Intergovernmental Panel Climate Change Report. And one of his recommendations for us as a state is to support this type of climate action planning. So I want to thank Representative Vang for the bill, for the work that's in line with what global leaders are telling us we should be doing as a state. And also I mentioned I'm from Northfield, that has a climate action plan, and we're working like crazy to keep up with it. So thanks, Representative Vang, for the bill today.
Representative Heinzman. Oh, Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize, I had to step away. Representative Vang, just looking at the bill, and this is probably a question that I'm going to bring up from time to time when these climate change impacts are being discussed. A constituent actually asked me, and I didn't really have a very good answer, so I'll pass it along. When we have these conversations, maybe this is a good question, we'll see. But quite often when we're talking about climate change, since the conversation has transitioned away from global warming to climate change, how do we measure whether or not these kinds of things are effective?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will perhaps defer this question to my testifier, who might be able to best answer this question, how we can measure this, the success and the progress that we've seen, at least other cities have taken a route on this. Perhaps Dr. Knutz.
Councillor Kraft, St. Louis Park, any measurement there?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. We measure it a number of ways. The pulling together of the climate action plan helps. It actually, you know, we talked about the Green Step Cities question before. There are many tactics there, pulling everything together in a plan with measurable guideposts is really helpful. We measure our results based on how much emissions have been reduced, but we also measure in other ways. These actions we're taking generally have many other side benefits. So for example, planting more trees to pull carbon out of the atmosphere has tremendous additional benefits. So we measure by tree canopy. Energy efficiency efforts that we're undertaking in support of businesses and residents in the area also have measurable benefits for them on the amount of money they're saving. We also measure, we have interim goals, for example, like achieving renewable energy, 100% renewable energy by 2030. As part of that, we aimed to double the amount of inbound solar or solar that's produced from within our community, which also adds resilience. And so we had this past year, we created an interim goal based on our climate action plan of doubling the amount. And we did. We did by putting a solar program incentive in place that wound up investing about $100,000 of city money to leverage $2.7 million of private money. So the climate action plan creates the overall goals. We break those down into sub-measurable goals, and then we track how we achieve them, and then achieve a tremendous amount of side benefits as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. You know, we're hearing a lot of these bills that talk about climate change and talk about, in this case, for example, action grants. And it is something, and I'm just going to put the challenge out there to those testifying and presenting these bills, or in the world of climate change science, as we're doing this, let's try to keep in mind or try to create a way that of measuring the impact of climate. And, you know, I appreciate the answer, but at the same time, you know, it really doesn't have anything to do with my question. You know, how are we going to measure an impact in climate when, as my constituent asked, we've transitioned away from global warming to climate change, and it doesn't matter if it's getting colder or getting warmer or what the events are. You know, there's it makes it really difficult to try to figure out where the best investment of taxpayer dollars is. And I know my second comment, Mr. Chair, is probably a little more irritating, but we allotted 20 minutes to talk about this, and I'm going over. I have a few more questions, but I'm going to hold back. My question to the chair would be, is there a way that we can have the conversations that we need to have? I don't mean to mess up the schedule, but there were a number of questions on this particular bill, and it's probably going to run over. So I hope that this isn't setting a precedent going forward when we do finally go back and get to be in person, but it feels like it could. That's probably a longer conversation we can have, Mr. Chairman, but I appreciate the discretion to discuss it briefly.
Thank you, Representative Heinzman. I think you don't need to worry about what could be. We'll just have to worry about what is for each one, and we are going to try to move judiciously and properly and competently through these bills. This one is going to another committee, the Climate Committee. So I did give some extra time here, and but we do have to get moving. So your
question. One final question then, Mr. Chair?
Yep, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vang, I bring this up to the chagrin of a number of the members on this committee, but I know this bill was introduced last year. No Senate companion. You're working on it again this year. I commend you, but I don't see again anything happening on the Senate side. We don't care, but at the same time, I just want to know, kind of, do we expect this to move forward this year, or kind of what are your feelings, Representative?
Representative Vang.
The chair, like all bills that members carry, we expect the bills that we carry to move forward. And so currently there's no Senate companion, but I do expect there will be one. And, you know, we still have a couple more weeks of session, and we'll see what happens.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinzman, I actually had to bring a second yellow jacket over to the Senate chamber today because you may be aware of this pattern of them not receiving yellow jackets that we send over. It seems to be, regardless of who's in charge, sometimes they get lost. So I personally went over there this morning, and I know that our members want to, just as you would, want to make sure that we are working closely with the Senate to get bills that can pass and move across to the governor's desk. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vang, is anything different in this cycle as compared to last cycle? Is there anything that has changed since you've discussed with Senate authors the possibility of this moving forward?
Representative
May. Mr. Chair, I will continue to have those conversations on the Senate side. And Representative Heisman, I'm also open to having more conversations with you. It seems like you still have some concerns, and I'm open to having that conversation with you too as well.
No more Representative Vang, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to thank the committee for your time to hear this bill, and I'm open to having more conversations, and it will continue to go through the committee process, and looking forward to your support.
I will renew my motion that House File 2200 be recommended to be re-referred to the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen?
Aye.
Chair Hansen votes aye. Vice Chair Wasilek?
Wasilek, aye.
Wasilek votes aye. Lead Heinzman?
No.
Heinzman votes no. Representative Akam?
Aye.
Akam votes aye. Representative Ackland?
No.
Ackland votes no. Representative Backer?
No.
Backer votes no. Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Representative Becker-Finn votes aye. Representative Ackland? Ackland is excused. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher votes aye. Representative Green?
No.
Green votes no. Representative Igo?
Igo votes no.
Igo votes no. Representative Jordan is excused. Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Keeler votes aye. Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Lee votes aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert votes aye.
Lippert votes aye. Representative Lewick?
Lewick votes no.
Lewick votes no. Representative Morrison?
Morrison, aye.
Morrison votes aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson votes no.
Nelson votes no. Representative Tice? Tice is absent.
Tice votes yes.
Tice votes yes. That's correct. Tice votes yes. Mr. Chair, there are 10 ayes and 7 nays.
The ayes have it. The motion is approved. You're on your way to climate. Next up, House File 3916, Representative Sandell, State Land Easement and Leasing Conveying Requirements, also known as the Lands Bill. Welcome back to the Environment Committee, Representative Sandell. I will move that House File 3916 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Chair Hansen.
And you also have an author's amendment?
I do, sir. Yes, sir. Would you like to take that up first, sir?
Yes, I would move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Could you explain the amendment, Representative Sandell?
Certainly. The amendment is includes additions to the lands bill, offering or requesting rather additional access and additional additions to the lands bill. I do have one question about the amendment, and that is on lines 3.28 to 3.34, which make reference to mining and the acquisition of state lands or county lands for use of mining, tax forfeited land, perhaps of depositing, stripping lean ores or tailings or waste products from mines or milling plants. When that language is used, there are people who get concerned about it. And I'd like, if members have read that paragraph and paid attention to it, or the DNR, if they would comment on that. The rest of the bill, I wholeheartedly support and am enthusiastic about, but I am a little concerned about that passage.
So if Ms. Damon with the Department of Natural Resources could address that portion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Susan Damon, Assistant Director, DNR Division of Lands and Minerals. I would actually defer that question to Land Commissioner Julie Marinucci. This is about county-administered tax forfeited land of duties of the county auditor. So perhaps she would be in a better position to answer the question.
Would Ms. Marinucci, welcome to the committee and state your name and who you're with for the record.
Hi, thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Julie Marinucci. I am the Land and Minerals Director for St. Louis County. And if I'm to understand the question correctly, it was in regards to lines 3.28 and our ability to do leasing as it relates to mining activities. Is that correct?
Chair Hansen and Ms. Marinucci, yes.
Ms. Handel, yep.
So this is, thank you. This is a portion of the statute that is not being amended, just to clarify. And this does give us the ability to work with mining companies to do the leasing. We've used it historically in areas that maybe they're picking up lands for buffer for the mining operations. We've used it in areas where there's been areas essentially where the DNR doesn't have jurisdiction because there isn't a minerals component to it. and it has to do with the auxiliary lands and the service estate. Did that answer your question?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Marinucci, yes. Thank you very much.
It's current law. It's not being changed. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it possible that Director Marinucci could maybe walk through or somebody who may be familiar with this, what's in the amendment? And, you know, generally these things are non-controversial, but it'd be great to have a little bit better idea of what's in the amendment. It's quite long, so that would be helpful.
Ms. Marinucci. No problem, Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. The pieces I'll focus on, we are looking for the ability to enter into conservation easements on tax forfeited lands. This would allow us to entertain the ability of doing wetland banking, stream restoration, those types of activities on tax forfeited lands that currently are not allowed due to the fact that we don't have the ability to do the conservation easements. So that would be one part of it. As I scroll through the land exchange component, this is a piece that we need legislation that allows us to exchange commercial peat. And this would cover two different land exchanges that we are currently working towards. One is with the Friends of the Sac-Sim Bog, and then the other one is a potential land exchange that would involve the Conservation Fund. So this is legislation we've come for in the past. And it, again, is to get around the commercial peat components. The next part under Section 17 is the Land Acquisition Trust Fund. This has come up in situations where we end up with a split estate on the surface and there's undivided interest. So it prohibits our ability to manage the land. And sometimes opportunities come to us where people are offering to sell us their undivided interests. And it's to our benefit, both from a surface land management, but then usually it would also tie to a consolidating the surface and mineral estate in those situations. So the ability for the county to purchase those lands with trust dollars, tax forfeited trust dollars, and then pull that back into the tax forfeited trust just consolidates the ownership. That would be one example. Another time this might be leveraged would be when there's an inholding of private lands in a large tract where we do forest management, or a strategic piece of land we'd want to pick up that would allow us to gain access. This would allow us to pick up those properties. Section 18 goes into a portion that's got trespass. You usually see these every year from us where we discover a garage that was built across the property line and we want to resolve that in the least intrusive way possible to those neighbors. But in order to do that, we have to get special legislation to do a direct sale. The second one of those in our list has got a portion, it indicates part of a parcel. This was in coordination with DNR Lands and Minerals to ensure that we are not selling more land than we need to in an area that has mineral potential. And then the last one I would speak to is the repealer language in Section 20. And that is in reference to our Lakeshore lease lot legislation that was passed in 2012 when we were getting out of the leasing of Lakeshore properties. At the time, the individuals who had leases with us had the option to either purchase the property outright or enter into a lifetime estate lease with St. Louis County. Due to the fact that they're lifetime leases, the sunset date that was built into the original legislation has been kicked forward a number of times. And at this point, the request would be that would be removed so that we can stay under current legislation. And it would allow us to work with those individuals who may have some significant time left in their lease with us for the Lakeshore lease lots. So I believe that's the majority of the pieces that we have got. I'm not sure if I'm missing anything.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the director could go through one component that kind of caught my attention that I had questions on earlier, and if she could expand on the commercial peat portion, that was something that I'm not totally familiar with.
Ms. Marinucci.
Thank you, Chair, Representative. And this is something that isn't specific just to the tax forfeited land trust. This is also something that the DNR has to do with other state lands. And I may redirect to Assistant Director Damon on this one, on the specifics, but it, in order for us to be able to exchange lands that have been identified as having commercial peat, so there's a peat resource on there that may or may not be viable. We've always taken the conservative route to get permission before we do those land exchanges to ensure we are covering that responsibility as it relates to our management of the tax forfeited lands.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
I think that covers it for me. No need to continue forward. I see Representative Lewick may have a question, but I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Representative Lewick, to the amendment or it's a bill?
To the amendment, Mr. Okay. Chair. I guess, and this is for Assistant Director Damon, can you assure us that there's no potential conflict with the underlying mineral rights with these what would tend to be surface easements? I just want to be certain that we don't accidentally provide authority for another government entity to encumber a piece of property with an easement that would conflict with the state's ownership of the mineral rights and ultimately the ability to utilize those mineral rights if that came about. Is there certainty there that there's no potential conflict? And I'm asking this obviously of the DNR because that's whose plate it would probably land on if there is one.
Ms. Damon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, I believe you are probably talking about the conservation easement provision in
yes.
lines 5.5 through 5.8, and the DNR does have some concerns about that issue, specifically with the matter that you raised, potential between our fiduciary responsibilities to, for example, the school trust or the taxing districts to manage state minerals. We are reaching out to the counties to try to seek an amendment that would ensure that we don't run into such a conflict. And Ms. Marinucci and I have already had discussions about that.
Well, thank you for that, that answer. Obviously, what's in front of us is in front of us, but it's a lot easier to avoid an issue before you create one. So I've got real reservations as to whether that particular element should go forward at this point until we see real clarity in language, because again, it's a lot easier to prevent a problem than it is to try to unravel one later in the courts, and that's likely where that kind of an issue may end up. Anyway, thank you.
All those in favor of the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Ayes have
no.
it.
Okay.
Nays, ayes have it. Representative Sandell, to your bill as amended. I think we've gone through much of it. Any questions, comments?
Well, Chair Hansen, members and committee staff, thanks very much for considering 3916, this year's lands bill, and the discussion on the A2 amendment. The lands bill is something of a tradition, I guess, usually a friendly exchange of privilege between the legislature and the DNR, and then I've had several conversations with members of the committee before talking with you today. You may have read the summary of the bill prepared by the DNR and included in the materials that are available to you. In addition, the DNR staff and who are the real experts on the bill are here to answer questions. The provisions of the bill appear to have minimal fiscal impact for the state, and I think they are it's a fair attempt to balance the interests of the state with those of private owners and local communities, an issue that I know that several of you feel strongly about. I was a member of this committee during my first term in the House, and though I still consider myself something of a beginner when it comes to the variety of issues you deal with, I was pleased and honored when the chair asked me to carry this bill. Its provisions are of particular and personal interest. First of all, the bill represents the dual responsibilities of the DNR to both protect and utilize the state's natural resources as stewards of the land. Particularly sensitive assignment, I think, and one I've questioned in the past. Additionally, the bill deals with land and water where I've spent considerable time, Trout Lake, St. Louis River, St. Louis and Fillmore counties, the Root and Cloquet rivers. Finally, I think the bill respects the balance of state and private ownership in establishing access, additions to state parks and forests, and the economics of lumber interests and sustainable forestry. I'll do the best I can to represent the bill, but the specific questions might better be directed to the DNR staff. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, this is for the author, or if he wants to, you know, have somebody else answer it, that's fine. Looking through this, it really, the land sales here really look pretty weak to me. Can you tell me how many acres within these projects and how many projects would be sold back to private citizens as opposed to other government entities?
Representative Sandell or to Ms. Damon?
Chair Hansen and Representative Green, while I read this bill for the first time and I looked closely at the amendment, I thought of you and the questions that I've heard you ask in the past. And I did ask about the number of acres, but I don't remember what Ms. Damon said to me about it. I didn't go through the sections one by one as I read through the bill, but I believe that DNR could probably answer that question for you.
Ms. Damon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sandell and Representative Green, directing your attention to Section 8, this is a proposed public sale of 29.6 acres. This is surplus riparian land in Cass County, and the intention would be to put that on the market available to private parties to purchase. Section 9 is 9.53 acres of surplus land in Fillmore County, and again, we would are seeking authority to put this up for public auction available to all members of the public. Section 10 is a very small proposed sale at no consideration to the city of Orono. It's less than 1 acre, it's approximately 0.55 acres. Section 11 in Itasca County is 59 acres. We would propose putting that up for public auction available to all parties as well. Section 12 is 2 acres. This is a proposed private sale, but it would be to a private party, an adjacent landowner. This is an access that the DNR purchased many years ago, but never developed for access. And then Section 13 is also a proposed private sale to a private party to address a trespass, and that's 0.05 acres.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the testifier. The first two projects that you mentioned, the one in Cass County and the one in Fillmore County, looks like a total of, well, not too many acres there. Can you tell me, when you put it up for sale, are the people bidding on it going to have access to it?
Ms. Damon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, the public sale is open to all members of the public except for DNR employees. And so parties who are adjacent landowners very often do bid on DNR parcels that are put up for sale. Parties that have access from their own properties would have the opportunity to bid on that parcel. Otherwise, any member of the public could bid on that, and there are ways that a private party who purchases that could seek access either through cartway petition or could seek an easement from an adjacent landowner.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to cut it short. The fact is that I see this all the time in the DNR, and although I appreciate you know, the attempt at trying to answer this. Neither one of these parcels has any legal access to it. And this happens all the time when the DNR puts these up for sale. The other issue here is the 59 acres in two parcels out of Section 11, where this land is apparently absolutely worthless because land has very little or low hunting value. It was purchased for an eagle's nest and at one time, and then the eagles moved out of there. I guess they didn't like it either. So the only real two projects here that are really any good are the 2 acres and the 5 acres, which is going to allow people access to land that they already have without being charged with trespassing on state land. So this is probably, no offense at all to Representative Sundell here, this is probably the weakest lands bill I think that I've seen. And I might have voted for it had not the amendment gone on. So I don't know. I hope we can do better as far as freeing up some of the property in the future. Thanks.
Representative Heinzman, happy eagles today, or what? Do you have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm struggling. Typically, like Representative Green just said, we kind of sail through these, but it really sounds like there is not peace in the valley on this. I'm not hearing that DNR is, as they typically are, fully supportive. It sounds like, you know, there's some things that still need to be worked out. And this amendment, like I said, typically a non-controversial bill is now becoming somewhat concerning. So, you know, I'm going to be a no vote today. I think that we need to do some work on that section that we've been discussing and get a little bit more support. And, you know, DNR has to go through a heck of a lot in these processes, and if we're creating an obstacle, I'd like to better understand who's affected and why we're doing this. And so I'm guessing, just looking at the clock, Mr. Chairman, that we're probably just going to take a vote and keep going. But I don't think we should do that. I think that we should probably table this and fix this language, or at least make sure that everybody's on board. It doesn't sound like stakeholders fully support this or even fully understand it. I mean, maybe somebody does, but right now I got more questions than I have gotten answers over the course of this discussion this afternoon.
Was that a motion to table?
That was a friendly suggestion, Mr. Chairman, before I go to that point.
Okay. Let's see what Representative Lewick has to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would echo the same thing. It's pretty clear, and I guess this is the eighth one of these that I've watched and been involved in actually carrying a couple of them years ago. This is not the way to adjust policy, particularly stuff that's dealing with state-managed mineral rights. So I would move to table this, and at least until we have some clarification language that makes it unequivocally certain that no matter what kind of easement is put on the surface, it does in no way conflict with the ability of the DNR or University of Minnesota or anybody else to conflict with the mineral rights extraction. There's a whole other process that's dealt with, and this would look to subservient the mineral portion to simply a local county government, and I don't think that's where we want to head. And I'm a strong supporter of, as my friends in St. Louis County, I'm usually here on the county side of this one. I think we got to fix this. And so again, I respectfully moved to table this, and with the expectation that we put some language in there that clearly clarifies that we don't use easements as a way to conflict or complicate the management of the mineral rights.
Representative Lewick moves to table the bill. The clerk would take the roll.
Chair Hansen.
Abstain.
Chair Hansen abstains. Vice Chair Wasilewicz?
No.
Wasilewicz votes no. Lead Heintzman?
Yes.
Heintzman votes aye. Representative Acomb?
No.
Acomb votes no. Representative Ackland?
Yes.
Ackland votes yes. Representative Backer?
Yes.
Backer votes yes. Representative Becker Finn?
Nope.
Becker Finn votes no. Representative Eklund? Representative Eklund? Representative Fisher?
Fisher, no.
Fisher votes no. Representative Green?
Yes.
Green votes yes. Representative Igo?
Igo, aye.
Igo votes aye. Representative Jordan?
No.
Jordan votes no. Representative Keeler? Representative Keeler? Representative Lee?
Lee, no.
Lee votes no. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, no.
Lippert votes no. Representative Lewick?
Lewick votes yes.
Lewick votes yes. Representative Morrison?
Abstain.
Morrison abstains. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson votes aye. Representative Tice?
Tice, aye.
Tice votes aye. Checking one more time for Representative Eklund. Looks like he's in the waiting room. And Representative Keeler. One more time for Representative Eklund. All right. Mr. Chair, there are 8 ayes and 7 nays.
Yes.
Representative Eklund votes yes.
Representative Keeler is aye.
Representative Keeler is aye. Mr. Chair, there are 10 ayes and 7 nays.
The motion is laid on the table. Next bill is Representative Morrison, House File 3630, Lawns to Legumes. Would you like to move the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 3630 for consideration to be laid over.
Representative Morrison moves House File 3630 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I'm happy to present House File 3630, which is a bill to continue the popular Lawns to Legumes program for another year. The program was initiated in response to the precipitous decline in insect and pollinator populations, and emerging science that supports the program's premise of creating pollinator corridors to support pollinator populations. The program supports a movement to establish residential pollinator habitat and protect populations of the rusty patch bumblebee and other at-risk pollinators. The program has been designed with 3 components: individual support grants, demonstration neighborhoods, and education and outreach campaign, with the goal of motivating and supporting as many residents across the state as possible. I know that Dr. Shaw and Bowser are here for questions, but I do want to share some quick initial numbers related to habitat installed in the pilot phase. 1.2 million square feet of pollinator habitat, 279 pollinator pocket plantings, 70 bee lawn projects, 61 pollinator meadow projects, and 1,100 pollinator beneficial trees and shrubs. Some other statistics on Lawns to Legumes: over 175,000 people have visited the Lawns to Legumes websites. There have been 130 published articles mentioning Lawns to Legumes. There have been 3,686 email listserv signups. Almost 2,000 people have attended Lawns to Legumes workshops. And the program has been featured in Oprah Magazine, Mother Earth News, and on the Weather Channel. The program has been unable to meet the demand as thousands of Minnesotans from across the state have applied. It got off to a fast start and is accomplishing its goal of aiding the transformation of residential areas into pollinator protection areas and of educating the public about the decline of our pollinators and to empower them with the tools to be part of the solution. Let's continue this program for another year so that the work to bolster our pollinators can continue. With that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to take questions, and I know that.
Representative Morrison, I think we lost you. There are other members having connectivity difficulty.
I think she just muted herself in the last couple sentences that she was saying.
I think I just said, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I think I just said, I implored the committee to consider continuing the program and that I'm happy to take questions. And I know that Dan Shaw and Bowser are here as well.
Okay. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad we got the last bit of what Representative Morrison was saying, because I want to specifically address that. Representative Morrison, it looks like, if I'm getting good numbers, that this program still has 1.2, actually significantly more money currently available, $1.2 million. I think the last appropriation was just a little more than that, $2,033,000. So there's quite a lot of money left from the original appropriation. So when you're suggesting that we need to continue this program, it looks like there's plenty of money to do that. That's my first question, Mr. Chair. Maybe Representative Morrison could help us understand if there really is concern that the program is going to be ending.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Heinzman, maybe you're referring to the 1.2 million square feet of pollinator habitat that has been planted. I could defer to Bowser to let you know what the exact current status is in terms of what's left of funding.
To Mr. Shaw, if you could introduce yourself for the record and give us an idea on usage and demand and lineup.
Ms. Chair, committee members, good to be with you. We received about $2 million for the appropriation for this funding. We do have about $1.2 million left to appropriate. The majority of that funding will be appropriated this spring. We have funding through both of our demonstration neighborhood grants and the individual support grants that will be going out in April.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad for the clarification. It sounds like Representative Morrison was looking for some information there as well. So it's good to know that there is significant dollars available. And I still question, and maybe the folks from Bowser could address this, how we know that all that money will be gone this spring. It's been quite a while since it was appropriated, so I'm not sure what might be triggering that significant dollar amount just to suddenly be spent. And then just a comment, something that I kind of wondered about, quite honestly, Mr. Chair, when we started talking about lawns to legumes quite a while ago, what the impact would be in communities. And as it turns out, there's a couple of news stories that I just want to mention for the record. Towns are starting to write some letters and putting that on our desks, as well as a number of other decision makers that have been promoting this in agencies and I think even maybe the governor's office, because it's kind of becoming a local control issue where you have a number of cities like my city that I'm mentioning now, Baxter, in this news story, that you know, they have an idea what they'd like for the lawns and so on to have in terms of height and such. And this program really has created conflict, and cities are starting to push back. So there may need to be some options that currently aren't available. Maybe an amendment could be offered, and I'm not prepared to do that today. The 24-hour rule's in force, but it's got to be probably something that we consider going forward, so that we're not stepping on the toes of cities all over the state of Minnesota who want to run this issue the way they want to. And hopefully, that's a consideration that can be made. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just on that point, Representative Heinzman, there's a bill moving through another set of committees on that particular issue that you may want to look at. You might
good
know
to hear, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
So back to Mr. Shaw, if you could maybe highlight the appropriations I believe the appropriation you referenced was the one that was provided last summer when we finally finished after on July 1st. So what are the appropriations and how much has been used and what has been the demand?
Mr. Chair, committee members, so for the appropriation that we'll be doing this spring for the targeted demonstration neighborhood projects, we're allocating about $650,000 for those projects. And then we have about 11,200 applications in the pool for individual support grants. So we'll be funding a good number of those applications in April as well. We have the applications that have been submitted, so we're working on the process of letting people know if they've been awarded funding through that part of the program. So majority of the funding that has not been appropriated will be appropriated this April. I just wanted to note, too, that we did slow down the appropriation a bit last fall, partly due to COVID, but then also the drought. We wanted to make sure that projects were going to be successful. So we decided it was best to hold off and do much of the planting starting this spring.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Morrison, for bringing this bill forward. I think it's we've seen significant demand for these funds for folks who want to do these projects, and so I thank you for bringing this forward so we can get more pollinator-friendly habitats across the state. I believe when we had an earlier presentation on monster legumes that I believe it was Mr. Shaw, but maybe somebody else was talking about just the demand in general overall for these programs. For Mr. Shaw, I'm wondering if you could maybe talk a little bit about that. I seem to remember there being a lot more demand than we weren't able to fund all those projects, but I'm wondering if you could let us know where that has landed in terms of the demand versus how much money we actually have.
Mr. Shaw.
Ms. Chair, committee members, yes, we have the 11,200 applications for individual support. We will be doing another application period near the end of the year. So overall, the request has been very high from residents across the state. I believe we've had applications from every county now across the state. And we do have our demonstration neighborhood grants. Since the beginning of the program, we've had applications from over 40 communities requesting funding for those grants. We've been able to fund around 30 of them now. And so there's been high demand across the state for the demonstration neighborhood grants in addition to the individual support. And then we do have the other component of the program, the education and outreach campaign. Representative Morrison noted that we've had 175,000 people access our website. And many of those people are accessing the website for projects that they're doing to access our resources through the website. So I think, you know, as far as a conservation program, there's been really wide interest from the community from around the state, which we think is, you know, real positive because it builds support for conservation in general as people get interested in these topics.
Representative Morrison, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 3630 and hope there is support for continuing the successful and effective Lawns to Legumes program so that Minnesotans can be empowered to choose to participate in this movement of protecting our pollinators. I believe this has been one of the most successful environmental programs in the last several years. I hope to have committee support. Thank you.
Representative Morrison renews her motion that House File 3630 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Next up, House File 2367, Representative Hornstein, Solid Waste Management Tax allocation amended. And we have the ability to go over a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. So I will move House File 2367 be recommended to be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. Representative Hornstein, welcome to our committee. Good to see you again. You also have an author's amendment.
Yes, thank you so much, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. Yes, there is an author's amendment, the A1, that simply just changes the effective date. This bill was introduced last year initially, so we need to just change that to keep up with the time here. So that would get the bill in the shape I'd like the bill, the committee to consider it in.
I will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Congratulations, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman.
Sounded like a strong bipartisan vote there for that A1 amendment. Representative Hornstein, to your bill as amended.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is critical to support our state's efforts to recycle solid waste. As we know, the benefits of recycling are very, very significant, both in terms of lowering costs and of waste management, but also for the environment. We keep waste out of landfills and incinerators. We are able to reduce carbon emissions. Recycling is popular. And members, what this does is really help our counties who have done a good job of managing waste, managing the recycling portion of our waste stream with very limited resources. And we know that more can be done. And those who support the SCORE program will readily admit that. And so what this bill does at its core is to really reset this funding, because you know, at one time counties received nearly 70% of the solid waste tax. That's one of the ways we fund these recycling programs. Today, less than 20% of the state solid waste management tax revenue is allocated to county SCORE grants. So unfortunately, SCORE grant funding levels have remained relatively flat while solid waste challenges have grown. And so this bill places 30% of the solid waste management tax revenue, about $28 million, currently going to the general fund, to SCORE recycling grants over the next 6 years. And so that ensures that user fees on garbage are actually used for the purpose that the tax was created. And that was to address the increasing solid waste challenges facing Minnesota. And just, Mr. Chair, I know time is of the essence, so I just wanted to conclude by saying that these SCORE activities range from programs to reduce waste, also ensure that food is donated, not wasted, ensuring materials are recycling to their best and highest use. And of course, when we talk about reducing organics, we also have increasingly robust organics food waste composting programs, which the SCORE program covers. So again, we reduce the amount of waste generated, we recycle as much as possible, we create and support markets for recycled products under this bill, we remove problem materials that makes waste management safer, there's public education included that the counties do. We offer technical assistance to public and private entities, composting, preventing food waste from being generated in the first place. And so, members, I ask for your support, this is an excellent time to be doing this. We've tried this a number of times. At its core, we are the money that is really should have been allocated from the general fund initially to this program will now be allocated. With our surplus, this is a perfect time to do it. I will conclude, Mr. Chair, with a quote from Rabbi Hillel, who wrote in the first century, "If not now, when?" And if not now, when we have the resources to do this, if not now, when we face increasing climate challenges, if not now, when our counties need and can use this money, this is the time to do this bill. And I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. First up, Fran Myron, Washington County Commissioner. Good to see you again, Commissioner Myron. If you could state your name and who you're with for the record.
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Barrows.
Commissioner Barrows, go ahead then.
I believe I'm the first one up, so thank you very much. Before I begin, I just want to say hello to my two representatives, Representative Heintzman and Representative Lewick, and thank them for their involvement in this important issue. And with that, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 2367. My comments today and those of my colleague, Commissioner Fran Myron, are offered on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota Intercounty Association, the Solid Waste Administrators Association, and the Partnership on Waste and Energy. And together, we developed a coalition to support this effort. We, the counties, as you know, make sure solid waste, or as most of us call it, trash, is properly handled. And we all recognize that this is a core function of government. So what began with regulations in cities about the location of city dumps and open burning has evolved into a system that is as complex and varied as the materials thrown away. The Waste Management Act declares how solid waste should be managed by establishing a waste hierarchy and sets goals for how much waste should be recycled. The Minnesota Waste Management Act is about reducing risk. And it isn't just risk to public health or the environment. While those are essential, the law also has measures to ensure the safety of people that work with waste, whether on a collection truck, at a recycling center, or at a landfill. But the law also addresses financial risk. And think about the value of prevention. 114 old landfills have been enrolled in the state's landfill cleanup program. And through 2015, the state has spent over $432 million cleaning up landfills. And MPCA projects it will need another $309 million through 2050. That's dollars that we all pay through taxes or insurance costs. That is a financial burden on all of us that will never go away. In preventing future problems, paying as we go can reduce that risk. While this public function is carried out by a network of public and private entities, the state holds only counties responsible for meeting state mandates. And despite this, less than 20% of solid waste management tax revenues are allocated to SCORE grants to fund recycling and reuse programs. So in our lead role, we, the counties, are mandated by the state to manage waste, and we know that more conservation and prevention work could occur with more resources. A few examples in Crow Wing County. Since 2019, we've had to reduce collection sites from 10 to 3 due to the cost. It cost Crow Wing County $3.5 million to construct a cell in our landfill. And because of the increased dumping, the life of these cells has gone from 6 to 7 years down to 4 to 5 years. And the last example I want to show is that, and not the least, is this financial picture that in Crow Wing County in 2019, we received $184,000. However, we spent $986,000. That translates to what you heard earlier, SCORE grant 19%, Crow Wing County taxpayers 81%. There are many mandates placed on counties: planning, regulating, operating, financing, contracting, and evaluating. This is all done by counties, but in the end, most of the cost achieving state waste and recycling goals and requirements are paid by local government. House File 2367 will help counties recover SCORE funding from the general fund to better protect public health and the environment as originally intended. Commissioner Myron?
Chair Hansen, members of the committee. Chair Hansen, good to see you as well. I'm Fran Myron, Washington County Commissioner and Chair of the Partnership on Waste and Energy. I'm pleased to be here along with Crow Wing County Commissioner Steve Barrows this afternoon to share our perspective and support for House File 2367. In 1988, in the face of mounting trash, litter, and illegal dumping problems, the governor created a task force called the Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment, or SCORE. Among its recommendations was one that resulted in the solid waste management tax, which is based on the cost of trash services. Originally designed to help state and local government fund recycling-related programs, the tax now provides nearly $28 million to the general fund. This slide shows why our organizations have developed a coalition. The graph shows how counties in Minnesota have continually stepped forward to fund programs required by the state to meet state goals, while the state's contribution to those programs has essentially remained steady. Counties have had to find other ways to fund recycling and reuse programs, some using property tax dollars due to inadequate SCORE grant allocations. This slide underestimates the local effort because it doesn't show the additional costs paid by cities for recycling-related services. Recycling and reuse programs run by counties have been successful, but more can be done. In 2019, Minnesota counties have diverted 2.5 million tons of waste to recycling and organic programs. An estimated 1.1 million tons of solid waste has been reduced. This means greenhouse gas reductions as resources are reused, recycled, and kept out of landfills. A good example with the Washington Ramsey County Recycling and Energy is the 500,000 plastic bottles being pulled out each and every day at the recycling center for recycling. Despite making progress toward an effective and comprehensive waste management system, more can be done to achieve our conservation and prevention goals. Passage of House File 2367 to increase SCORE is truly an investment in Minnesota. The recycling industry employs 37,000 Minnesotans and has an estimated $15.7 billion economic impact. Developing local recycling markets keeps resources, jobs, and businesses here in Minnesota, and it will allow us to build on a system that reduces, reuses, recycles, and processes organics. We are approaching 6 million tons of trash annually, and now is the time to help us move closer to our goal of zero waste. Counties in Minnesota respectfully request that the legislature pass House File 2367 to restore funding for recycling to counties so that we can continue to improve this necessary public service. I want to thank you and Stan for any questions along with Commissioner Barrows.
Next up, Nels Paulson, Conservation Minnesota.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. My name is Nels Paulson, and I have the pleasure to serve as the Policy Director for Conservation Minnesota. We are a statewide nonprofit with members in all 87 counties, and we advocate for environmental and conservation policies and funding at the Capitol that help protect the Minnesota we love. For many years, Conservation Minnesota has been a strong supporter of returning the redirected revenue from the solid waste management tax back to counties for SCORE grants. We thank Chair Hornstein for his continued leadership on this issue, and we fully support House File 2367. Our members and nearly all Minnesotans agree that they want to do their part to improve recycling and composting and to reduce household and hazardous waste. Increasing recycling and limiting waste is a vital aspect of protecting our environment and the people who rely on it. Waste production and recycling decreases the amount of waste sent to landfills and incinerators, limiting greenhouse gas emissions. Landfills in particular are a major source of methane emissions. According to the MPCA, food that could otherwise be recycled through organics programs makes up 18% of landfills in Minnesota. The food breaks down and produces methane gas with heat trapping potential 25 times greater than carbon dioxide. Using SCORE grants, counties are well situated to make recycling and composting easier for Minnesotans so that more material is reused or disposed of in an environmentally friendly manner. Even before the pandemic, Minnesotans were throwing away an estimated 850,000 tons of recyclables, and that number is likely higher today. We've all read the news articles about landfills needing to expand because more people are throwing away more things. We know that landfills not only emit climate pollution into the air, they can also leak harmful substances into the surrounding land and groundwater. The state has already spent hundreds of millions of dollars cleaning up leaking landfills, and we know there's lots more work to be done. As Representative Hornstein said, now is the time to recapture the revenue for SCORE grants, and we ask for your support of House File 2367. Thank you.
Doug Carnival, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have only a 1 minute speech. Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, my name is Doug Carnival from the Branche Carnival Law Firm, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota chapter of the National Waste and Recycling Industry Association. Of private sector waste haulers, recyclers, and waste processing facilities. Thanks for the opportunity to comment on this bill. We greatly appreciate the efforts of Representative Hornstein to capture additional solid waste tax revenue that's currently being sent to the general fund, and our association's long-held belief, as stated in statute, that solid waste tax revenues should be used for solid waste purposes. Fully support greater diversion of recycling materials, including organics, from the waste stream. To that end, we've always supported increasing the SCORE tax grants to counties to provide more resources for reducing waste and recycling more materials from the waste stream. We support legislation that fairly and equitably distributes additional solid waste tax revenue to the counties for recycling purposes. Thanks for the opportunity to participate, and we fully support Representative Hornstein's efforts.
Representative Eklund has A2 amendment. Representative Eklund, would you move the A2 amendment and explain it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I move the A2 amendment. Our local governments have done a great job, but unfortunately we're producing more waste every year and needed to accelerate our waste efforts. The amendment would change the bill from a 5%, 5%, 20% over six years to a 15% this biennium and next biennium. A little additional information. The bill is all about getting 30% of the solid waste management tax directed to our waste purposes, SCORE grants. 15% and 15% translates to approximately $15 million in this biennium and another $15 million starting the next biennium. Mr. Chair, Association of Minnesota Counties brought this amendment, and Chair Hornstein was agreeable with me offering it, I do believe.
Representative Hornstein, your view of the amendment.
Mr. Chair, this is a friendly amendment. I support it.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Say nay. Strong, unanimous, bipartisan vote for the A2 amendment. It is adopted. Any questions for Representative Hornstein? Representative Heinzman.
Mr. Chair, I generally am very satisfied with a lot of what's going on here. I think that more of the money that should have, I think, previously been going to funding these things should definitely find its way. And with so much of it being held back to the general fund, that's a problem. I think that this bill basically gets at that. I do have some questions as to how the money's being spent, and maybe MPCA could weigh in. The examples given today, Chair Hornstein, are all examples that I think everybody can support. That's why we have some bipartisan conversation on this. And, when we're directly boots on the ground, as commissioners have mentioned, doing the recycling work that the public wants, great. Do we have a breakdown, though, of how that money is being spent? Because quite honestly, as I'm looking at some of the behind-the-scenes spending, it does look like MPCA directs a significant amount of those dollars into a lot of programming that isn't boots on the ground. Is there a way that someone from MPCA kind of break that down, comparison of dollars going into the programs that we were hearing out from our county folks and city folks compared to how much of it is consumed in programs at MPCA or various public awareness campaigns and such?
Representative Hornstein, is someone here from PCA who could perhaps provide that in writing?
Yeah, I do believe that there are there is a PCA assistant commissioner on the line.
Mr. Kadelka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm an assistant commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and work on land issues. The legislature each year appropriates a set dollar for SCORE that to the agency to go out to grants. Those dollars then go up by a formula, and each one of those dollars that are appropriated for SCORE grants to the agency is given out to the counties. We did a couple weeks ago send some information on a history and a sample of various other types of activities where the legislature appropriates dollars to the agency for solid waste, closed landfill, those type of programs, and those come from the Environmental Fund under appropriations from the legislature, but also the appropriations for bonding projects and some general fund programs that the legislature appropriates.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Assistant Commissioner Kadelka. That unfortunately doesn't get at what I'm specifically referring to in terms of the SCORE grants. I'm looking for a breakdown as to how SCORE grant money is distributed and what MPCA does with significant amount of those dollars for these other programs that I'm hearing about that aren't the boots on the ground stuff that everybody really is excited about and promoting today in committee. It sounds like there's a number of other program areas that are being supported with a lot of money that doesn't really fall into those categories. And that's what I'm speaking to, not the bonding money and so on and so forth. I'm talking about these SCORE grants specifically. Maybe the commissioner could address that.
Commissioner Kadelka, could you get that to the committee?
Correct, Mr. Chair and committee members. Every dollar that's appropriated to us in SCORE dollars and the appropriation goes out to the counties, and we can present that in writing too.
That's helpful, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Lewick, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a great step forward. I want to thank Representative Hornstein and Commissioner Barrows. That's been a long-term problem. We've had this tendency in St. Paul to skim dollars that were intended to be put to use at the local level, and this is a good step forward. This is probably there's a bill like this comes up every year that tries to make sure we don't fatten the general fund with dollars that don't belong there. So I wish the bill author and everybody the best of luck, because this isn't the first time that we've tried to make sure that those dollars go to the proper place. So I want to thank everybody. It makes sense. And as Representative Heinzman brought up, there's another issue there as to how much money we may or may not have at the MPCA level that may be better used at the local level. But let's not let the perfect stand in the way of getting something done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very quick. Just a clarification as I was bringing this issue up. I am specifically referring to, and this is for our friends at MPCA, the use overall of the solid waste tax, and I was bringing in the SCORE grants, and that was confusing. So maybe that will be helpful as we look forward to getting more information on this going forward. But I know our time is running short, Mr. Chairman, but just a brief comment to that. I know we're running over, but I am concerned that this is somewhat a precedent-setting format where we're allotting 20 minutes here and a specific amount of time there, and that is concerning. That in previous scenarios outside of Zoom land, time is typically available, and in this case, it's turning into years now of this format, and I'm expressing concern. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Heinzman. And Representative Hornstein, this is the third such bill in a theme that we've had. We have the MLCAT and the lottery in lieu of this committee wants to fix past wrongs. We go back 20 years and we've had these raids or different appropriations, and sometimes it takes a long time to get things fixed. And I'm hopeful with this unprecedented budget that we have, budget surplus, that we can fix these past wrongs and do what was finally intended to be right, done right. So, Representative Hornstein, to your bill as amended, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate all the comments of committee members and your support. And I would underscore this is a great bill, and we have strong bipartisan support for this. And I appreciate that bipartisan support very much. So with that, members, I ask for your support, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill.
Representative Heintzman, is your hand still up, or is that just a remnant?
Thank you for checking, Mr. Chairman. That is a remnant. I will lower it.
I will renew my motion that House File 2367, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Vice Chair Wasilek?
Wasilek, aye.
Wasilek votes aye. Lead Heintzman?
Aye.
Heintzman votes aye. Representative Akam?
Aye.
Akam votes aye. Representative Ackland?
Aye.
Ackland votes aye. Representative Backer?
Aye.
Backer votes aye. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn votes aye. Representative Ackland?
Aye.
Ackland votes aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher votes aye. Representative Green?
Aye.
Green votes aye. Representative Igo?
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Jordan votes aye. Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Keeler votes aye. Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Lee votes aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Lippert votes aye. Representative Lewick?
Lewick votes aye.
Lewick votes aye. Representative Morrison?
Morrison, aye.
Morrison votes aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Representative Tice?
Tice votes aye.
Tice votes aye. Mr. Chair, there are 19 ayes.
Congratulations, Representative Hornstein. A strong, unanimous, bipartisan vote.
Thank you,
Madam President.
Members, thank you.
We are adjourned.